all bad things. Tragedy.
Tragedies, disasters. Bad things.
Trigger warning for everything possible.
What?
I'm Rachel.
And I'm David.
And this is All Bad Things.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome.
You can follow us on Insta, X, Facebook, TikTok, Twitch, Darts, and Blue Sky at All Bad Things Pod. Email us at allbadthingspod@gmail.com. Join our Facebook discussion group, our subreddit, and our Discord.
Do all of those things.
Yes.
In that order. If you would, please. Mm-hmm. Do at least some of them. I've never been on Blue Sky, so I...
At all?
No.
Oh, okay. We are.
I do threads and occasionally Instagram and mostly discussion group at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it's the only thing I use Facebook for anymore is our discussion
group.
Yeah,
pretty much. I don't use it for anything else. Yeah, I don't really even post much.
I post nothing.
Except for, like, yeah, Let's Go Canes.
Mm.
Speaking of which.
Mm-hmm. We're recording this on Monday, the 23rd.
Tuesday.
Tuesday. I'm glad it's Tuesday. Trust me, I don't want it to be Monday again. Tuesday, the 23rd. And the Canes played last night, Monday.
Yes, they did.
What did they do?
Well, they came back from a 3-0 deficit, and they made it 3-2 with about 9 minutes left in the game, and that's when you kind of felt like they're going to come back and like do this, and it took a little bit, but a little over 2 minutes in the game, they tied it, then they went ahead with 9 seconds later, and then they got another goal, an empty net goal, about a minute after that. So within about 80 seconds, they scored three goals and
wound up
winning the game. And it was just, I can only imagine what it must have been like to be there.
Right.
I mean, you could feel it coming through the TV.
I'm sorry you didn't end up going. I know that was one you were thinking of.
I mean, I've been to crazy playoff games before that had like, holy shit, like, what did I just see? That would have been cool, but whatever. It was fun to watch.
Yeah, good.
And we are up 2-0.
Here we go.
In our quest for the cup.
By the time this episode comes out, can they have won if they sweep?
Yes, it is possible.
Well, because they play. Fingers crossed.
Because this is Tuesday, they play on Thursday and then on Saturday.
Okay,
so it is possible.
Well, you all know something we don't.
I don't think they will. I think the Islanders will get one at least at home, but I think at this point we're gonna win it in five. We should.
Okay.
We're just a better team.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, the Islanders had 12 shots on goal the entire game. And scored 3 times, which is that's not usual.
25% success rate?
Yeah. So.
Am I right on that?
Or 33%, right?
Three goals.
On 12 shots. You're right.
Yeah.
Yep. 25%.
Somehow I can.
Which is a ridiculous shot percentage.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like you're not.
Well, you know, you miss 100% of the shot you don't take. Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott. this is, I think, the first time we are recording right after I get done with work.
Yeah, that might be.
We've recorded right after you get done with work, but it is really weird recording at like 4 p.m.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Because I start work early, so I was done early, and I'm ready to forget the infuriating conversations I had.
You're ready to unwind by hosting a podcast.
About disasters.
Yes.
Exactly. Well, oops.
Speaking of which.
I have to take out my little notebook and I buried the script.
So is this a listener script?
Yes. Okay. Still working. This is my last week of class and then finals next week. And your girl is done. Done, done, done. Donezo with grad school.
Yep.
And,
Until you go to law school.
Damn it. That is going to happen one day, isn't it?
Probably.
Motherfucker. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? Anyway.
Give it 10 years.
Yeah, I need a break. I need to... I enjoy not doing much in my off time. You know? Stardew Valley. There is a whole new update
whole
of Stardew
Valley.
That I need. I haven't even made it to Ginger Island this save file.
Apparently because of the show, which I've seen the first 4 episodes, but Fallout 4 is getting an update. Mm. It's a 9-year-old game.
Like DLC?
It's getting extra content, okay. Yes. And I think Fallout 76 is too, but I don't have that one downloaded at the moment. Mm. But, yeah, I guess the show has been consistently had doing good well. Reviews. And
okay.
I mean, I thought the first 4 episodes were pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty faithful to the game and the kind of cheesiness mixed with a bit of a goriness mixed with a bit of a 1950s aesthetic. It's a tough thing to pull off.
Yeah. Almost like an anti-steampunk or something. Like a... Or maybe...
It's in the vein of steampunk.
Yeah. Mid-century modern steampunk.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. That's interesting.
But, yes, to all the Fallout fans out there, and I'm sure there are some. Plenty of people have played one of the games. Mm-hmm. I have only played 2 of them. But,
Well, yeah. Shout us out if you're a Fallout fan or a Stardew fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see.
I'm sure there's probably more Stardew fans.
I mean, Stardew is a big game.
Mm-hmm.
Big game. Plus the new update, so, yeah.
Updates for all.
Updates for all. You get an update. And you get an update. All right. Are we ready for the disaster?
I guess. You know what? Our faithful audience knows
yes.
why we always hold it off.
And our faithful script contributor, I'm sure, would expect nothing less. We have another stellar script from one sir. I'm going to go ahead and knight him. He's, okay. He's sir. He's an American sir. He is Surly Hutch. Not Surly Hutch. Sir Lee Hutch.
It sounded like he was surly.
Surly
which
Hutch.
Which he is.
He is a little surly, but in the best way possible. Yes. Lee Hutch.
Author. Two-time award-winning
published
author. I believe he won awards for each book as well.
Yeah, I think he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, regardless, he's an award-winning author, exactly.
I do not have 2 books that I've published, so...
I don't have 1 book that I've published.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
We give him all the awards.
Done way better in society than yes. I have.
We'll just start saying, you know, Nobel Prize winner, Lee Hutch.
Yes. Shaman we'll of Middle Earth.
We'll just give him all the honorifics.
I don't know if he's in the Lord of the Rings, but I would guess that he would be.
He's watching The Sopranos. I know that.
Oh, okay.
We could call him. Oh, damn! It's been a minute since I've seen The Sopranos. What's a mob head? Capo Lee Hutch. How about that? He's a captain. He's Capo. Anyway, this is a script by Lee Hutch.
We can't stand him.
When the sirens are gone, the Thiokol disaster, Woodbine, Georgia. February 3rd, 1971, a script by Lee Hutch submitted to the All Bad Things podcast because you know Lee Hutch very nicely formats all his scripts.
Yes,
so
he does.
I wanted to read the cover page too. Here's a picture. Oop. Missed the first page. There we go.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
I already have an idea of what this might be.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Yes.
Oh, we open with a director's note.
Okay.
I love that. Open with the usual banter. I think we covered that.
Achieved.
Political rants if needed. Political rants are always needed.
Sure.
Even though we didn't go on one this time.
We did not.
Description of beverages. You went back to Miller Lite.
I did.
You were drinking Coors for a minute there. Was that just because the store was out of...
They were out of Miller Lite.
Okay.
that's the backup beer to me.
And give the locations of Demetrius and Jesse Pinkman. They are currently locked out of the
yes,
room.
They are.
But we are well in advance of dinner time, so we may not hear from them.
We might not.
We'll see. Introduction. I was once asked to sum up my fire service career in a few words. My response was 15,000 tragedies.
Hmm.
Jeez. I don't know how many calls I responded to during my career, probably more than 15,000 since we averaged 12 a shift and worked 24 on, 48 off. That's a brutal schedule. I mean, I know that that's pretty typical, but...
Yeah. To be on for 24 hours straight, that's...
Even with the 48 off, like, you're sleeping through, like, the first 24.
Mm-hmm.
But when you subtract all the bullshit calls, 15,000 might be close to the number of real ones. On occasion... These tragedies played out against a backdrop of a larger tragedy, such as hurricanes, chief among them, You know which hurricane, big hurricane he worked?
Well, yes, but Katrina.
Yeah, exactly. Katrina. After which, I have never gotten a full night's sleep. Oof, yeah. Or Rita, which, among other things, robbed me of my house. I feel like Lee has lived 15,000 lifetimes.
Yeah. More than one.
Yeah. Just his experiences. It's wild. In situations like these, the focus is often on the larger tragedy, and the individual tragedies get sort of lost in the shuffle. That is the case with today's story. It is of an industrial accident which took place against the backdrop of the Vietnam War and a divided country, which meant that apart from the immediate area affected by the tragedy, it wasn't a big story in the rest of the country the way it would be if it were to happen today in a world of social media and a 24-hour news cycle. Since this tragedy unfolds against the backdrop of the tragedy in Vietnam, as Gump said, quote, it's this whole other country. And also Laos and Cambodia, I think it's appropriate to say a few things up front. Though the last American ground combat troops left Vietnam in 1972, the war did not end until 1975. I was born 3 years later.
I was born 2 years
later. You were. I think you're just about a year older than Lee.
We're of the generation where, like, our dads were in Vietnam and our grandfathers were in World War II. Or Korea.
Yeah, I'm almost dead positive I've said this before, but my parents were too young for Vietnam. My grandparents would have been too old for Vietnam and too young for World War II. My paternal grandfather did serve in Korea.
Yeah, I mean,
that was in the middle.
Some served in both World War II and Korea.
Yeah,
which is nuts.
Yeah, it's true. If you were young enough and stayed in the service, mm-hmm. Yeah. I was born 3 years later. I grew up in a rough blue collar area. It was majority African American. We were the only white people for a 6-block radius, but we were all poor. The war cast a pallor over my childhood. My father was a Vietnam veteran. I don't think I knew that about Lee's dad. In fact,
well,
he was...
Like I said, that's our generation.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and your dad
my
wasn't.
My dad served, he just never, for whatever reason.
He was a little old for Vietnam, but your Uncle Carl...
Yeah, he was over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was in there.
He was capital in there. Yeah, for sure. Agent Orange and the whole...
Yeah.
The whole nine.
Which I believe we did an episode on.
No. Agent Orange, I don't know.
Thought we
did.
Okay.
Did we, guys? Can you tell us what we've done podcasts on? I don't think we did, though. That's not ringing a bell. I mean, it's been 7 years almost, which is wild.
Almost exactly.
So it's definitely possible I just forgot, but... Yeah, 7 years ago, this time, we were starting to record our first episodes.
We were. That's true.
It just took
us a while to put them out.
Yeah, yes.
Initially.
And I took so much time editing. That soon fell by the wayside. Aren't you so glad?
People are like, really? Where? When? It's like, you got to go all the way.
You sure
you got to go to the way back.
You do. The war cast a pallor. I already read that, and of course it wouldn't be a listener script if I didn't reread things say, "Oh, I already."
I just dropped you too. So.
Read that. All right. So Lee's dad was a Vietnam veteran. In fact, he was in Vietnam from March 1970 to March 1971 with the 7th Cavalry. He was 19 at the time.
Yeah.
That is the average age of a soldier in Vietnam, according to Paul Hardcastle. Is that the artist? Anyway, I only know that from the British office. Moving forward. His own issues when he got back are the reason why I grew up with an absent father and was sent to live with my grandparents when I was 8. I love this script. I love learning all this about Lee. I mean, he had a super interesting life, but I didn't know this stuff. That's very interesting to learn. Growing up, all of the kids my age had Vietnam veteran fathers, many of them absent entities in our lives, and the ones that weren't absent struggled with a host of issues. An African-American Vietnam veteran who lived next door to me when I was 7, Mr. Elliot, taught me how to throw a football and taught me how to ride a bike and how to fight. He's still alive and still lives in the same house in the old hood.
Nice.
I try to get by to see him once a year. That's really sweet.
Yeah.
I love that. Because I lived on the Gulf Coast, we also had a large influx of Vietnamese refugees from 1975 to 1977, the so-called boat people, because they escaped by boat. Many of them settled on the Gulf Coast. I have heard that there's a sizable Vietnamese population in the Gulf Coast. Yeah.
Hmm.
They were mostly poor, and the men went to work in the shrimping industry. There were several families that lived on my block. We grew up playing together and going to school and mass together, since the ones who lived near me were mostly Catholic. We taught them how to play football, and they taught us to cuss in Vietnamese. You know, cultural exchange.
Yeah,
nice.
Absolutely.
It's fun learning curse words in other languages.
Yes, it is.
zut, I think, means damn in French. I know that.
Okay.
That's all I can say. Like, zut alors means something. Hopefully nothing too offensive since I just said it. But that's all I'm thinking of as far as lyrics. All
right.
You're like, keep going, just move along. The Vietnam War was a tragic mistake, not just for the American life. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's to put it mildly, right? Not just for the American lives lost, but for all the lives lost. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I'm sure I've mentioned this before. I'm positive I have, but in case you're new here, my theory on why, I mean, the 1970s, even into the early 80s, into like even like 82,
mm-hmm.
was just a fucking crazy period of time domestically.
It really was.
I mean, it was off the rails, like insanity. Like if...
Domestically and abroad.
Yes.
But yeah, I agree.
And my theory is it's because of the Vietnam War, because mm-hmm. it touched everybody in America at the time.
Yeah.
Unlike any other war since, mm-hmm. because the draft stopped mainly because of the Vietnam War.
Mm.
Amongst other things, now our army is, like, you know, it's volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
right.
conscripted.
Conscription, yeah.
So, but... Everybody knew somebody that either joined, served, passed away, mm-hmm. got injured, got this, got that, or several people that went through that knew, you know, mm-hmm. everybody was involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly think, like, the mental health of America in the 1970s was just, everybody went nuts.
Just tanked, yeah.
Because of Vietnam. I mean,
yeah.
What was the point? And it turned out, I mean, it was... And now Vietnam is apparently, like, a beautiful place.
Like, a great place to go, yeah.
Yes.
Or live, yeah.
Where they have... where they have the
end... Down,
where
they
have,
we have mentioned that helicopter.
Where they have challenges on the Amazing Race.
That's yes, so nice. By a downed helicopter.
A downed U.S. Army helicopter.
Yeah. Still one of the funniest moments in reality television.
Yes.
Unintentionally horribly offensive and hilarious.
And, like, part of the reason that everybody in this neighborhood is poor is because they're all Vietnam veterans. They're either... Some of them mm-hmm. passed away, or mm-hmm. they're just gone mentally.
Yeah, try holding down a job when you can't really function mentally.
Yeah.
And
or physically,
you're...
maybe they're done, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it could, you know...
And you're
you didn't have to lose an arm, but you could have mm-hmm. had some sort of fracture where it's like... I can't lift anything ever
but
again.
But David, we love our veterans. We take care of them great, right? That's why the Veterans Administration is the most efficiently and well-run institution in the entire United States government, right?
Damn straight.
If we really fucking cared about our troops...
There's no such thing as a homeless veteran. Only there's
right?
tens of thousands of them.
If we actually gave a shit about our troops, we would take care of them after the fact.
Yeah.
The fact that we take care of them so piss poorly goes to show exactly how we actually feel about our troops, which is some bullshit.
How our government feels about the troops.
Yes, that's fair, because I think...
Not the citizens,
right? That's correct.
It's one of the few things that, like, liberals and conservatives can agree with. Like, let's do something for them when they come home.
Right.
Make sure they're not homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure, yeah, maybe they can't do a functional physical job. Mm-hmm. Maybe they can answer a phone and be a who the hell, something.
Which is my contention about true patriotism. Don't fucking ask me to stand up and put my hand on my heart and take off my hat to sing the goddamn national anthem, which is a bullshit song anyway by a fucking asshole racist. But you know what I will do? I'll pay more in income tax so that people who are veterans can actually have proper care. How about that? That's fucking patriotism, you fucking assholes. Not this bullshit, like, wear a little fucking American flag lapel pin. That'll solve the problem.
Solved it. You didn't know that?
Oh my God. It just irks me to no end, like this fucking virtue signaling and dog whistling about patriotism. It's like, no, you know, if you actually want to be a patriot, pay your goddamn taxes and then pass budgets that go to show where your priorities lie. Sorry, Lee. What? Sorry, Lee. Getting back to Lee's script.
Something about Vietnam. See, Vietnam is even to blame for this rant. That's how it all started.
I am anti-Vietnam War, but I have a soft spot in my heart for Vietnam veterans.
Absolutely.
Yep, many of them draftees who had no choice.
I cannot imagine if I was 19, when I was 19, and all of a sudden somebody was like, hey, you're going 8,000 miles that way into the jungle.
Yeah.
To fight something.
Yeah, made up shit. Made up shit.
Yeah, I would scare it out of my fucking mind.
Can I say it like the one thing that I know is a conspiracy and I maybe don't ascribe to it, but I'm open to it, is the idea that the CIA killed JFK because they wanted to get into Vietnam and he was against the Vietnam War. But Johnson wasn't.
It's plausible.
See? It's a Mythbuster plausible.
Yes, it is. Well, that's how all conspiracy theories start. There's a grain of truth.
Yeah, right?
All you need is a grain.
I do think the American political establishment was pro-war.
Well,
that resulted in anything.
Here's what I learned from that Netflix documentary about the atomic bomb, is that the atomic bomb was the reason that we had so many spy agencies all of a sudden. I was like, I never thought of it that way.
Well, it's high stakes. It really amped up the stakes, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Anyway, again, on our non-political... show, which is about disasters, which are in no way ever political.
Right.
Everything happens in a vacuum.
That's right. Disasters always happen in a vacuum. Yes. Yeah.
There's nothing leads to it. Just happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whatever.
All right. So Lee had said that he has a soft spot for Vietnam veterans, many of whom are draftees. And before you say, well, they could have gone to Canada, I would say, check your privilege.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's easy to say that.
Certainly way more difficult to do in Louisiana than it is where I grew up, where I literally grew up on the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't doubt that there were
some people who could,
I'm
and
sure
did.
There were. Yeah.
But
because it was literally right there, it was across the river. It's across the whole fucking country.
Yeah.
If you live in Louisiana. Yeah.
The Vietnam era draft targeted the economically disadvantaged.
All wars do.
Middle class and upper white class kids could afford to go to college. Yep. That was a way to get out of it. And get a draft deferment or pay off the family doctor to say that they had a foot boo-boo. That's true too. While the poor were sent to Vietnam.
Former president did that.
Which one would that be?
I don't know. The guy that's running again. He's orange.
But David, he's not. He was a self-made man.
No, I didn't know that.
Self-made fuckface. Well, he is a self-made fuckface. Well, no, that's not true. His dad helped turn him into a fuckface.
That helped, but he finished the job in a spectacular manner.
Yes.
By becoming president, which I'm sure his dad didn't even like. Talk about like wanting dad to be proud.
We're just over a page into the script and you're on your second.
I am. Yeah.
I think this might be a multi-parter.
Because there's a lot of pages.
There's many pages. I did identify a good midway point, so we're probably going to go ahead and break this one up. Otherwise, it's going to be like a 3-hour long episode.
Cheers.
Cheers. In this war, your family's income level had a direct bearing on your likelihood of being
fucking
killed
right.
in combat. Yep.
Every war up to that point, let's be honest, because Desert Storm, that was volunteer. That wasn't
conscripted. Well, there was no conscription.
Yes.
By volunteer, I mean you could have already entered the service but not known that you were going to get sent to war.
Correct.
You know?
But
still.
Nowadays, if you're entering the service, we've been at war since 2001.
You know it's going to be a thing.
You're walking into some sort of war. Might even be for another country.
But a lot of people who enter the service do so because that is an economically viable option.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Again, still target. I mean, how many Harvard grads are going to the military other than, like, some version of a high-ranking officer? And I wouldn't even think all that many Harvard. That would be. No, I'm just randomly interested to know how many Harvard grads are in the military. But anyway. The ground war in Vietnam was fought by poor white kids from the Deep South, poor black kids from the Deep South and inner cities, poor Hispanic kids from the Southwest, and poor Native American kids from the reservations.
Yeah, the movie Platoon kind of makes a hints at what he was just saying here, because the main character, Charlie Sheen.
Nepo baby Charlie Sheen.
Great film, though. Great actor. But... that's kind of, he's like, you meet people from places you've never heard of. And he lists off, like, you know, they're all, like, either southwestern or southeastern cities. Or, not cities, just places that existed.
Right.
Like, imagine what that looked like in the 1960s.
Right. People who didn't have the same options as the middle class and upper class, I use the term kids deliberately. There are 58,267 names on the wall. So I'm imagining he means the Vietnam War Memorial in D.C. 39,996 of them were younger than 22.
Yep.
That's more than half, like two-thirds. And 33,103 of them were only 18.
Yep.
Those are children.
And the ones that were all under 21 at the time couldn't vote.
Mm. Okay, I'm drying out my soapbox for one other thing. It incenses me that we have not figured out where the line is in adulthood for, like, equally or even, like, unequally adult things. Like, oh, you can vote at 18 and you can go to war at 18, but you can't drink until you're, and at this point you can't smoke until you're 21, right?
That's right.
They did
change
age?
That.
Motherfucker!
I remember that, like, about a year ago. I saw some kid get turned down for cigarettes when I was at Sheets.
Jesus.
And,
like, make up your fucking mind.
And I said to the cashier, I was like, they changed the cigarette age to 21, didn't they? And he was like, yeah, like a couple of years ago.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
It's like,
it was a Trump era thing.
Never affected me ever. Like,
sure,
it was,
of course.
You know,
what,
and shit, my oldest,
you're
my
over
oldest,
21?
Yes, I am. But my oldest cousin is old enough to be around for when they changed the drinking age from 18 to 21.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a lot of places, especially where I grew up, they didn't enforce it for like a good 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They were just like, you were like right there.
How do you tell a 20-year-old who has been allowed to drink or smoke, now you can't for another year? Like, that's bullshit. The switchover is bullshit. And also, like, I'm actually not bothered here or there whether we pick 18 or 21, but it should all be the same age. It feels so fucking hypocritical. You should be able to drink, smoke, and vote at whatever the same age is.
And you should be able to do it all at the same time.
Oh, and serve in the military.
Yes.
And serve in the... I would actually be fine.
You should be, like, in the middle of a battle, having a drink and a smoke and, like, casting a ballot. You should be doing all four of those
things. The one thing I would say is I'm actually okay with lowering the voting age, but the other three need to remain consistent with each other. Because I do think I'd be okay with, like, 16-year-olds voting.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
if you can now we're going to add more conditions.
Let's
if you can operate a motor vehicle, you should be able to vote.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right.
Let's get back to the soapbox.
All right. For those keeping track at home, a good listener script, according to Nicole, includes Rachel's voice raising by several octaves. Already past that, so we're good to move on.
Lee is already, right, like, hiding in shame. he's like, I didn't mean for this to happen.
I think Lee enjoys observing the chaos. That's my guess. All right. Remember, old men make wars, and young men, and increasingly women,
die in them.
Yep.
That's why young people are against war.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones
that
are sent to it.
Yeah.
She's, I mean, 19 and your life is snuffed out.
Also, remember that during the bulk of the war, and Lee was probably like, yeah, you could have gotten to this first. You could get drafted at 18, but you couldn't vote until you were 21. Mm-hmm. The 25th Amendment, which lowered the voting age to 18, wasn't ratified until July 1971, 8 months before the last American ground combat troops left Vietnam.
Well, I mean, part of the reason that it's become an issue lately, and it incenses me whenever I see it, because conservatives know they can't win on merit. Meaning,
right.
On issues, they just can't.
Because most of their stances are not supported by the majority.
So they're little by little trying to chop away at, like, who can vote, okay? You'll see this on the right, especially after the last 4 years. You'll see that we need to change the voting age back to 21. And it's like, you say you support the troops.
Yeah.
I can show you a wall of people, mm-hmm. an actual wall of people, mm-hmm. that is the reason that you're 18 to vote.
Right.
So tell me you're for the troops now.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the president is the chief commanding officer, mm-hmm. right? He is the head of all of our military. And you're saying that, so people who don't want, who want you to be able to serve in the military, but not get a say in who your boss is?
Yeah,
that's exactly. Some bullshit.
Yeah.
But the rest of the country, anyone over a certain age does get to, but for those 3 years, you don't get
you
to.
Don't.
Yeah, that's some bullshit. Politicians were sending kids to die who had no right to vote for the very politicians condemning them. Okay, yeah, we're just of group mind with Lee here. Voting for the very politicians condemning them to an early death or a lifetime of torment from the effects of Agent Orange, wounds, or PTSD, or all of the above.
Yeah.
I hope there is a special place in hell for all those politicians. Actually, mm-hmm. for politicians in general. I concur. If there were a hell, I'd be okay with that. So that as long as I got to watch everybody come in after me.
And it would just have to constantly play the song "See You in Hell."
See you in hell, yeah. My friend. Who was that by? Grim Reaper.
Grim Reaper. Yes.
See you in hell, my friend. See you in hell.
That could play for eternity. It'd be all right.
It'd be kind of fun. It's a banger. Yeah,
exactly.
When I got hired by the fire department in 1997. Oh, wow. So he was 19.
The year I moved to, my first full year in South Carolina.
So Lee was only 19. And
I was 20.
Okay.
Yeah, we are a year apart.
Yeah. All of the OG firemen with 20 plus years on the job were Vietnam veterans.
Not surprising. Yeah. And this was also like when, because the weird thing growing up, looking back at it now, because now there are like, there are people that are growing up and who were born like after 9/11.
Yes.
So it doesn't.
Yes, very much so.
It doesn't have the same effect on them that it does on us because sure. they weren't around for it. Mm-hmm. I think we were kind of that, like, yeah, we understood Vietnam was bad and everything, but we didn't experience
right.
it. So, mm-hmm. but everybody had an uncle, dad, mm-hmm. dad, uncle,
the dunkle,
dunkle, father-in-law, stepdad.
Then like, yeah. The next generation defining thing is going to be kids who don't remember COVID.
Yeah, that's true.
Or don't
yeah.
remember a world without COVID, I should yeah. say, because it's going to still be around. But
mm-hmm.
yeah. So, as a probationary firefighter, my captain, battalion chief, and the senior man on my engine company were all Vietnam combat veterans. They taught me everything I know about firefighting, and I owe my survival on the fire ground during the length of my career to them. Their courage was matched only by their mustaches, something I could never quite duplicate myself as much as I wanted a fierce handlebar mustache.
Me neither.
Yeah, you can relate.
Yeah. I'm with you, Lee, like the we can't really grow facial hair club. Like, I thought at some point in my adult life, like, I'll be able to grow anything. Like, nope, it doesn't work that way. When I was 19, and that's what I thought. It's like, I'll be able to grow a full beard one day. Like, no, I won't. Not even by the time I'm 50.
Hey, I'm personally grateful for that. I'm not much on facial hair, so.
Yeah, I'm fine with it now. I'm like, it's better. Like, my situation is way better than somebody that has to shave, like, every day.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they will grow a beard in, like, an hour and a half.
Yeah, they have 5 o'clock shadow yeah. at 2 o'clock. Yeah. yeah. As I have now said my piece on the war, I will quote Forrest Gump. That is all I have to say about that. And move on to my sources. Oh, that's right. We're only 2 pages
in. What is this about?
That is not Lee's fault. A word about sources. My sources for this episode, because I'm pretty sure we're breaking this in half at this point. So, episodes include several news stories and a documentary that came out in conjunction with the 50th anniversary of the disaster. I also read various and sundry, I love that, various and sundry newspaper articles from both 1971 and recent ones written about the disaster. And I studied the Memorial Group's website, which has some great photos. As an individual who has seen some shit blow up in my day and had to literally pick up the pieces, I also used some of my own experiences to flesh it out. That's why one of the many reasons I love Lee's scripts. Well, he's an actual author too, so. The man knows how to tell a story. All right, the first 2 months of 1971. Some of the top hits on the radio the week of this disaster are well known to many of us.
Some Steppenwolf might be on there, and Led Zeppelin for sure.
Mr. Bojangles by the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's like a Dylan cover. Say
you might know all these songs.
Do you know the song Mr. Bojangles?
If Mr. somebody
Bojangles.
Played it.
It's a Dylan song, I'm pretty sure, but I know people did cover it. Your Song by Elton John. Okay. And you can tell everybody this is your song. Maybe quite simple, but...
Let's just get through the song.
I hope you don't mind. I hope you...
Oh, that's your song?
Yeah, that's your song by Elton John. Okay. And one of my favorites, I love this, Lee. I love the grassroots.
She's fist bumping.
I'm fist bumping here. Love the grassroots. Notable member Creed Bratton from The Office, grassroots. Temptation Eyes. Temptation Eyes, looking through my soul. Temptation Eyes, you gotta love me tonight.
Yeah, fantastic.
I forgot about that song. Maybe my band should do that. That's a good one. In January of 1971,
there are other songs.
The great boxing champ Sonny Liston was found dead on January 5th. Okay. I don't think I ever heard anything about how he died.
I don't know either. I know he was a pretty big fighter in the 50s and 60s.
Coco Chanel died on January 10th. On January 17th, who defeated who in Super Bowl V?
Super Bowl V would have been Baltimore over Dallas, I believe.
You got it. And the Baltimore.
The Baltimore Colts, and I believe the final score was Baltimore won by a field goal. Like 17-14, I believe, was the final score.
Lee did not put the final score in. We'll have to verify that later. On the 25th, Charles Manson and his minions were convicted of the Tate-LaBianca murders.
Yeah, something. Yeah, but this is also, it's the early 70s. Trying to wrap up the 60s,
mm-hmm.
You know, every decade bleeds over into the next.
The bleed over, yep. The biggest movie in January through the week of the disaster in February was...
1971. I don't think you'll get Rocky. I probably won't. Not The French Connection.
Love Story.
Yeah, that's what I was just going
to
say.
Love means never having to say you're sorry. It is one of my favorites, and the end still reduces me to tears every time I see it. Oh, I've never seen it.
I was going to say Harold and Maude.
With a great soundtrack by what recording artist?
Jim Morrison? I don't know.
Cat Stevens.
Sure.
Okay. A gallon of gas cost how much?
Fuck back. Like 27 cents.
36. You weren't that far off, which is a mere $1.33 in today's money.
Man, not bad.
bring back some of that, right? Yeah. Bring back some of that, right? Yeah. In January, All in the Family hit the television waves as a series. The pilot episode aired in 1969, but the first season didn't hit air until 71. Huh.
Interesting.
Based on the British series Till Death Do Us Part, the character of Archie Bunker in All in the Family was meant as a full-on roast of actual racist people, though today, the subtlety is lost on a lot of people who see the show itself as racist.
Yeah, they think he's like some sort of hero.
Right?
He is a hero to the right wing.
When it was lampooning actual racists.
They're like, see, like, free speech on TV,
The show was groundbreaking as it tackled controversial topics on television in a time in which that was very uncommon. The show got away with it because it was through the lens of comedy, much like the Twilight Zone episodes got away with social commentary when it would otherwise be taboo because it was science fiction. I wasn't a big fan of All in the Family as I was of the spin-off series, The Jeffersons.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Moving on up. This is my Rachel Sings episode. To that deluxe apartment. George Jefferson was originally a neighbor of Archie Bunker before the Jeffersons achieved some business success and were able to move from Queens to Manhattan, hence the theme song, Moving On Up. What I particularly liked about George Jefferson is that he called white people honkies. Sadly, the term has fallen out of use. One day in class, I referred to myself as a honky, and no one, not even my African-American students, knew what it meant. It is a very old-fashioned thing.
Naturally, they probably just looked at him funny.
Naturally, I informed them. Truthfully, I don't know how much history students learn in my history courses, but they learn a lot about life, which, if you think about it, is really the most important thing anyway.
As long as they're having fun.
I've digressed, so back to 1971. You know you don't have to apologize for digressions.
Yeah, we've already done plenty of it for you. We haven't even gotten to the actual story.
And we're 41
minutes in. We apologize for the six of you still listening, being like, they'll get to it by like the 20th minute.
We don't apologize because love means never having to say you're sorry.
Correct.
This was the era of the muscle car. A fully decked out 1971 Dodge Charger RT cost $3,775,
nice.
Which is about $28,000 in today money.
That's pretty good.
That is excellent.
Yeah. I'll take one of those for $28,000 brand new today. Yeah.
A basic Charger or Challenger is more expensive today.
Oh, wait, like almost fucking twice is a Charger.
In June of 2023, I bought a red Dodge Challenger and paid quite a bit more than $28,000.
Yeah.
Her name is Molly, since Molly helped me buy it, meaning Molly of Molly's Song, his book. The 71 Dodge Charger would go on to become famous in television lore because the Dukes of Hazzard drove the 71 Dodge Charger RT, though honestly, I was more interested in Daisy than cars.
Yes.
Also, weren't they racist? Wasn't the Dukes of Hazzard, didn't they have like a Confederate flag on the top of their car or something?
They did, but we didn't know it was racist when we were five.
We didn't know slavery was racist. We didn't know the Confederacy was racist.
We really didn't. We just knew these guys drive this fucking cool car. The doors are sealed shut so they can only climb into it.
Why? What is the purpose?
So they can only climb into it.
But what is the purpose?
Because it looks cooler that way. I mean, that really was the purpose.
Wiremen. Just, I don't know.
So yeah, I didn't realize until later. I used to have, like, I remember when I was a little kid, I had a huge, like, poster of the top of the car.
Oh no, so I had a huge
Confederate
flag. You had a Confederate flag poster?
And I didn't realize it, yeah.
Oh boy. I'm rethinking our whole marriage.
And I was from damn near Canada.
Oh jeez. The town of Woodbine. This disaster took place in Georgia. Woodbine is the county seat of Camden County, Georgia, which is in the far southeastern corner of the state along the Florida border. Florida-Georgia line. Mm-hmm. Woodbine is located about 47 miles due north of Jacksonville, Florida. Beautiful Jacksonville, Florida. I apologize to anyone who's from Jacksonville or lives in Jacksonville, but...
I went there once.
How'd you like it?
I mean, the game could have turned out better. If the game had gone better, I would have really enjoyed it.
Did you love all that Jacksonville had to offer as a town?
Sure.
It is on the south bank of the Satilla River. In 1971, Woodbine had a population of around 1,000 people. The population dropped below 1,000 for the bulk of the 1980s, but today the town has around 1,200 people. Today, the city is around 60% white and 40% African-American. Given that this disaster hit the African-American community the hardest in 1971, I would assume the demographics were similar back then. I have never been to Woodbine, and I haven't spent all that much time in Georgia. I guess if 95 runs through Woodbine, maybe I've driven through it, because I've definitely driven through 95 plenty of times.
On the way to Florida, of course.
Yep. Though once I drove from Atlanta to Savannah along the route that Sherman's soldiers took during their march to the sea. And I did it wearing a t-shirt with Sherman's face on it that said, "Do it again, Uncle Billy." That's such a Lee thing to do. Did.
And there were like five people that understood the joke, but he met all five of those people.
I was denied service at several gas stations and restaurants. I was threatened with bodily harm on a couple of occasions, too. I just wish this had been in the YouTube age.
I was just going to say, yeah, it was barely like in the Jackass age. Mm-hmm. Like, could have had a show.
Oh, man.
You were so close.
I think someone needs to give Lee a show.
Yeah.
For sure. Disasters are bad no matter where they happen. However, big cities often have the response infrastructure in place. Large fire departments, hospitals, etc. Small towns lack these things, and so disasters can hit particularly hard there. So now on to the Thiokol Chemical Company. Mm. The company was founded by two chemists in 1929. It is still in existence today as a subsidiary of Grumman Corporation.
I know who that is.
Do you?
It's a German company.
Is it Grumman or Grumman?
I think it's Grumman. But it, yeah.
Okay. Well, you would know the foreign pharmaceutical company.
Yeah, I'm in that industry.
Yeah. Over the years, it has gone through many name changes from Thiokol to Morton Thiokol to Thiokol Propulsion to Orbital ATK. I think I've heard Morton Thiokol. Did that come up in another episode? If anyone remembers, let me know. It does. If anyone remembers, let me know. Is it like a thalidomide thing? I don't know. I might be making that up. The company started when two chemists accidentally created a synthetic rubber, which they called Thiokol. By the time of, I think I'm pronouncing that right, T-H-I-O-K-O-L. Thiokol?
Sounds right.
I think it is, but anyway. By the time of the second...
It sounds like a pharmaceutical drug.
It does. Or a rubber, I guess, a synthetic rubber. By the time of the Second World War, they were a major supplier of synthetic rubber and polymer sealants to the U.S. military. After the war, it was discovered that, I bet this fucking comes from all the fucking rocket stuff we've talked about. It was discovered that the polymer binders made by Thiokol were of great use as binders for solid rocket fuel, which got them in the space business. Remember that. It'll come up in the end of the episode. Oh, boy. Okay.
All right.
So maybe Lee will tell us where we've mentioned it before. In 1964, Thiokol built a plant in Woodbine, Georgia. It would be hilarious if Thiokol were like, and I'm guessing the end of the episode, I don't know, or like was like in the Challenger, and here I am being like, Thiokol, that sounds familiar. Uh-huh. Wrote like a whole script about it.
What?
But do you think I remember anything? No. So they built the plant in Woodbine, Georgia. Originally, the plant was intended to make solid propellant motors for NASA, but shortly after that, NASA switched over to liquid propulsion. In 1969, at the height of the Vietnam War, the U.S. Army awarded a contract to Thiokol to manufacture 750,000 magnesium-based trip flares for use in Vietnam. The plant in Woodbine would begin to produce these. The decision to build the plant in Woodbine was met with much excitement from the local population. Job opportunities were scarce in the area, and the promised 500 jobs would be a boon to the local economy. 500 jobs in a town of like 1,000? That's half the population.
Yes, that's half employment. Like, right, just at this one place.
Right.
You're at 50% employment.
Many of those hired were African-American women who, prior to this, had been relegated to working in the tomato fields or working as maids at the hotels along the highway.
We're talking 1971, so sure.
Or maybe 69, a little.
I was gonna say a little
around
earlier.
Around 69,
yeah. So
is when they got the contract. Yeah. Jobs working for companies who fulfilled government contracts were seen as good jobs. It's like a step away from a government job, so, and pretty close to it. The company purchased a 7,000-acre tract of land that had at one time been a cotton plantation. The company employed an anti-poverty agency, I'm not really sure what this is, exactly, but this was in the newspapers, to teach employees how to read and write, but employees were never trained on handling explosives, flammables, or even what to do in the event of an emergency. During the late 1960s, the company was, among other things, making mortar shells for the army. I feel like if you're making mortar shells, you should know how to handle... You should be trained by your employer who's having you make it how to handle it.
Sure.
It's not their fault. I'm blaming the boss. It always is capitalism. Production of trip flares began at the plant in 1970. So, what is a trip flare? I don't know what it is. Do you?
Well, I mean, if it's what it sounds like to me is something you step over, lights off a flare, goes way up in the sky, it gives away your position.
Like a trip wire?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. It Except is a flare pops out and gives away your position.
So. Well, it is a trip wire connected to multiple flares set in the ground. You got it. These are placed around the perimeter.
Grew up on a lot of military movies.
G.I. Joe's.
Yes, that too.
These, I bet at least one Stallone movie included tripwire.
Mostly Schwarzenegger movies.
Though. Oh, there you go. Yeah. These are placed around the perimeter of a camp or base to provide warning and illumination in the event the enemy attempts to infiltrate your camp at night, as was common in the Vietnam War.
That's how they tried to fool the Predator and Predator.
Was with tripwires?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Take that.
Take that, Predator. Did it work?
It wound up at the very end of the film. Yes, it does.
Okay. Spoiler
alert. I'm not going to spoil a 37-year-old movie, though. Nobody's seen it yet.
I haven't seen it. I've never seen it.
I bet it holds up. I really bet it does.
How many movies have you said that about and I end up eviscerating?
Well, that's your fault. not the movies.
Oh, yeah, 16 Candles. It really holds up.
It definitely does. It's not racist at all.
Oh, my God. That was the worst, sexually assaulty, racist, disgusting, misogynist film. It's so gross. When the enemy hits the tripwire, it pulls the fuses attached to the flares, which immediately start to burn and produce a lot of light. Typically in Vietnam, these flares were placed in predetermined kill zones mm-hmm. with machine guns already zeroed in and sighted on those areas. I've included a photograph below which shows what one looks like when it is tripped. Yeah,
sure.
Big flare, mm-hmm. lots of smoke. These flares were manufactured in a building known as M132. It was basically a windowless concrete block. It was 37 feet by 135 feet, and it was divided into bays, which were 12 by 15. Workers mixed 500-pound batches of illuminate to go inside the flares.
Damn.
That's a lot. This was a mixture of sodium nitrate and magnesium. It was ground into powder and placed on trays, which were then placed in a cure room, where the temperature was kept at 110 degrees to keep moisture and dampness out of the mixture, mm-hmm. which could potentially spoil the batch.
I mean, it'd be like, I've worked at plenty of places where we had something similar. It's basically a clean room and static-free room.
Oh.
You have to have certain PPE on just to mm-hmm. even go in there. And you had to be of a certain level just to go in there.
Like training.
Yes. Yeah. Not anybody can access that room.
Static free because it could cause an explosion.
Mm-hmm. Especially at this type of place.
Yeah, no kidding. Yikes. They also followed a similar process to make the ignition pallets, which would cause the illuminator to ignite when tripped. Workers on two parallel assembly lines then assembled everything. The 60 people who worked in building M132 were mostly African American women who made around $18 a day. That's $132 in today money.
I was going to say, for back then, that didn't sound that's probably about as good as you could have had it.
I'm trying to divide and I can't. Well, it's more than $10 an hour.
Yes, I was going to say.
Even for today money.
For today's standard.
Oh, that's certainly not livable.
No.
Yeah.
But back then it might have been.
It's really not a lot. Lee goes on. Yeah, it's really okay. Not a lot of money, even back then. But for many of them, it was the most money they had ever earned in their lives.
Like what I was saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably the best that they could do.
Right. Owing to the fact that this was the South and they were not white.
Yeah.
The company was actually losing money on their government contract for the trip flares. Fires were also not uncommon. There had been 5 fires in the 2 months before the disaster. All of them were fairly small, and the employees went right back to work as soon as the fires were out. In January, just weeks before the disaster, a Department of Defense inspector visited the plant and voiced no objections to anything. But now, the plot thickens. Mm. And I think that's a good spot.
Yeah?
To end.
Okay.
We still have 3, 4,
I was going to say, we don't want to make this a 3-parter, do we?
7, 8. No, I have a feeling it's going to take off after this, you know? And because there's less Vietnam talk, will probably have less interruptions. Yeah. So I think that's a good okay. spot to. I appreciate. I love Lee's deep dive into all the background.
Well, I mean, you know why? Because, everything happens in a vacuum, right?
Context is everything.
But it's because nothing happens in a vacuum,
right?
And there's a reason all this is happening, and there's a reason this plant is there. Mm-hmm. There's a reason that. You know,
there's a reason it's probably not going to end up being the safest place to work.
Exactly. I mean, it's already starting to remind me a little bit of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. Uh-huh. It's going to be something similar, but something different at the same time. Mm-hmm. But what it is going to involve is young non-white women.
Yeah.
That this is the best that they can do.
Yeah.
And if there are no precautions that something goes wrong, then there are no precautions something goes whatever the fuck. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But David, we're in a post-racist society.
Well, that's what it said. And, that's where we're supposed to be, I think, 60 years after. But it's never going to get there 100%. And I don't think it's obviously, let's face it, it's obviously way better than it was in 1964.
But better doesn't mean good.
I understand that.
That's the problem, right? Right.
But that's, as long as it keeps moving
along.
Well,
that's the problem.
Yes.
It's not guaranteed to keep moving along. And we're winding back a little too much.
We already know that there's a faction that literally wants to go backwards.
Yep.
So. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, all these issues are coming up again.
They've never gone away.
They did in the sense of popular opinion. Well, now it's...
Well, and people, more and more people are pushing back and starting to question how we've functioned and how our systems are baked in to be so naturally racist.
That's what happens
by design.
That's what happens when you constantly give just, you know, the upper class whatever it wants and no accountability. Like, yeah. But anyway, but about the story.
But speaking of the story,
speaking of an author sending us stuff to read. You showed me a picture already, so I already have an idea of what's gonna happen.
I think so.
Whether the audience really knows, I'm not sure yet. But
don't Google it if you don't want spoilers.
But I can already.
I'm not gonna Google it. I'm not either.
But I can already kind of, because we've done a lot of episodes, I can kind of already see like how this is going to map itself out.
We've talked about fires already happening, unsafe working conditions. Yep. It's an industrial disaster. Yep. Lee said that. So yeah. And dangerous chemicals and things that are meant to catch fire, but not in this and in this circumstance.
Not in this sense necessarily though.
Not until it goes over to Vietnam and then it's supposed to catch fire. But geez. Yeah. So,
but working under these conditions myself, it gives me a greater, like, appreciation for.
I think like, you have slightly better working conditions.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like
in a similar
how crazy must this have been 50 years ago?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And maybe they didn't. Maybe nobody had to wear anything.
Right.
I don't know.
Uh-huh. This is the nascent days of OSHA,
Oh yeah.
Early. I forget when OSHA was.
OSHA might not have even happened yet.
OSHA's
like 73 or 74.
It was more around like the EPA.
This is when
right?
all of the New Deal stuff, like from a regulation, from an agency standpoint, is kind of starting to finally kind of kick in.
And a lot of stuff, oddly, actually came up under Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
Like the EPA.
He passed a lot of stuff. Yes.
I mean,
the New Deal took 4 presidents, essentially, to constantly, and it took like really like 4 presidents to destroy it all.
To destroy it, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Even ground.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm very curious to see what's going to happen in episode two, which, but I already have, being this is the podcast that it is.
Yeah, it's not going to be good.
Pretty good idea of what's going to happen.
Not
going to
be good, unfortunately.
So that was When the Sirens Are Gone, The Thiokol Disaster, Part 1. Woodbine, Georgia, February 3rd, 1971.
A script by Lee Hutch.
Yes. And this has been another episode of All Bad Things. I'm David.
I'm Rachel.
We'll see you next week.